Oh, this view is just incredible. Oh, slightly out of breath. Oh, surrounded by all these mountain peaks, you feel so small and insignificant. I think that's another glacier over there.
Yeah, that is, yeah.
So I'm here hiking up the mountain with Regula Gubler, who's an archaeologist working in the Swiss Alps. Regula, where are you taking me?
I'm taking you up to the Lütjen Pass, which is where we have archaeological finds from an ice patch. And you're going to see what the ice patch looks like this year and see if you find any more archaeology.
Regula Gubler is on a mission. The ice in the Alps of her native Switzerland is melting frighteningly fast, and hundreds of archaeological artefacts are quietly emerging from it. What sort of altitude are we at now?
At the moment, we're about 2,300 metres above sea level, and we'll go up to 2,700.
Okay.
And that's the pass that then connects the north, the area of Lake Thun and Bern, with the south, then ultimately with Italy.
So just got to cross this stream. Okay, onwards and upwards. Here we go. Get the lungs ready for the climb. For this week's Costing the Earth, I've got my hiking boots on to see how our glaciers are shrinking.
After you.
Every year, Regula comes to check on a particular patch of permanent ice, now melting, where she's found evidence of human civilization dating back thousands of years. So we've made it to the top. We're almost at our destination after a hard hike. Now, I can see a glacier, the head of a glacier over there, but we're not heading over there, are we? We're not looking at a glacier.
No. We're going to look at the ice patch that has been there for thousands of years and see if it's still there.
But when we make it to the top, there's bad news.
Oh, there you go. It's just a puddle of water these days, yeah.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, that is it.
Oh, crikey. The ice patch is no more.
You know, see where the big blocks are?
Yes.
On the right-hand
side? Yeah.
They were almost covered by ice in 13.
Okay. So how many years have you been coming here for then?
I've been coming here since 2011, and almost every year.
When you first started coming here, how large was the ice patch?
The ice patch sort of filled this hollow, like you saw a little, like where you have now the lake, plus about 2 meters on each side. That's probably about...
So sort of 20 meters by...
15 maybe, something like that, and at least a couple of meters deep ice or snow.
And now there's nothing there, it's a puddle,
no,
you say,
it's just a puddle
of water.
Yeah,
how does that
is.
Make you feel?
It's sad.
The situation is particularly bad in Switzerland this year. Last month, GLAMOS, the organisation which monitors the country's glaciers, released new figures, showing that the ice has retreated at an astonishing rate. Glaciologist Matthias Huss is the head of the organisation.
In this year only, we've lost about 6% of the total glacier ice volume that is still present in Switzerland. 6% in 1 year, that's much more than ever before. In the last decade, we've always seen a lot of glacier melting. So typically we had something like 2% ice volume loss per year, which is also very much. But now it is 3 times more than the average of the last 10 years that were basically every year already extreme. And this is really disastrous.
Why has it been so bad, particularly this year?
This year has been a combination of 3 different factors that were, well, very difficult for the glaciers. So first of all, we had very little snow during winter time, meaning that there was only a small protective layer at the beginning of the summer. If we have little snow, the snow will melt soon, therefore exposing the ice, and therefore the loss of the ice is starting early. Then we've had a lot of very high temperatures in the Alps, heat waves that basically went from May until the beginning of September. And then at a third factor, we've had several events where Saharan dust was blown into the Alps and deposited over the snow during March to May.
So dust from the Sahara has been blown across the Mediterranean all the way to the Alps.
Yes, exactly. And this Saharan dust is making the snow dirty. It makes it absorb more solar radiation. and therefore it melts even faster.
So was this year, 2022, worse than expected?
It was certainly worse than we had ever expected to see in these times. But I also have to say it was not completely unexpected, because the climate scenarios they predicted since a long time, that the extremes in the weather would increase and also become more frequent. And also our glacier models have shown that such extreme melt rates are realistic. But I personally wouldn't have expected to see such extreme events already right now. It's more something that we expected for the future, but now we realize that the future has already become reality. It has been most dramatic at higher elevation. This has really been very surprising to us. For example, on the Concordia Platz at Great Aletsch Glacier, the biggest glacier in Europe, we've seen 6 meters of ice melting in the vertical scale. This is much more than ever before, and we haven't thought that this would be realistic already now. Maybe for the future, for future scenarios in 20, 30 years, but not already nowadays. It's a window into the future that we're seeing, and it's very impressive to realize that all this is becoming true.
Records of glacier measurements in some parts of the Alps go back more than 100 years. But this year, Matthias's team has had to permanently close 3 of its monitoring stations because there's just not enough ice left to measure. It's something I saw for myself in the Alps. Not far from the ice patch turned puddle is a glacier.
So I'm just heading over to take a look at it. It's coming into view now. I can see it's actually quite a fairly small one, relatively, but it's very clear where the head of it would have once been. I can see it sort of marked out in the rock face. And my goodness, it's, I mean, that's a good 10 metres, I'd say, that it's dropped. This regular told me that 10 years ago when she first started coming, it was right up at the top of that arch. So 10 metres in 10 years. And that doesn't count for how much it will have shortened as well up the valley. So, yeah. It's really quite sobering to see this.
Meanwhile, back at what used to be the ice patch, Regula and her colleagues set to work sifting through what looked to my untrained eye just like bits of wood. It's a race against time to save these little pieces of history. Once exposed to the air, they quickly disintegrate and are lost forever.
So what's this? What have you found? What do you think you might have found?
It's 3 pieces of wood. We were discussing if they really worked like by human hands, or if it's just,
because this one's got almost like, it's almost like a big needle eye in it.
Yeah, but that might also just be
where the wood's cracked.
Yeah.
Now, is that something down here in the water?
This? Yeah, there's another one of those.
Is that Gore-Tex?
Yeah, it's at least a modern fabric. It's not.
Yes,
prehistoric.
Yeah.
But well spotted.
So, nothing exciting this time. But each scrap emerging from the melted ice could be something significant. In recent decades, Alpine archaeologists have made incredible discoveries, including a frozen human corpse in Austria, Otzi the Iceman. Here in Switzerland, Regula's found things which have also turned out to be thousands of years old.
The best find is actually a whole assemblage of early Bronze Age things. That's about 2000 BC. And
Such as
a box made of splint wood.
Oh, wow.
And fragments of at least 2 bows. A lot of arrow fragments, 3 arrowheads made out of flint. Yeah, and I can show you some pictures here from the other finds.
Great, so this is stuff that you found, you've taken back to the lab now. And
exactly, this is now from the excavation in 2017. You see here bits of leather and bits of wood. This is the first find that we had.
What is that?
Well, these are leather bits, and that one is a birch bark. And you think it's a bag. It's basically two bits of round birch bark sewn together.
Gosh,
so
right,
we think
okay.
And this is from the Iron Age, so this is about 400 BC. We have no idea what it is. Basically, looks like a wooden shoe, or like a little wooden boat.
I mean, looking at these images of what you found here, that some of them are incredibly... The detail on, for example, this bag, we tend to think of people from the Stone Age, Bronze Age, as being quite unsophisticated. They're not.
No,
not
they're
at all.
Not. They really know how to use these raw materials and what to do with bark and bits of leather straps, leather bindings that we think might have been from some kind of carrying rack, because you're going to have to need to carry your things across the mountains. And it looks like someone left half their equipment up here. And we don't really know much about how people cross mountains here.
And why would they have come and crossed the mountains here?
That's a good question. We think it's probably, one, is trade, because we do know that from the Mesolithic, so from 8,000 BC onwards, you have trade going across the Alps.
So they would be bringing cattle over this pass?
At least in the medieval period, we have written sources that they did that, yeah.
Right.
In prehistory, I
don't
know.
And evidence, and fossil evidence?
Well, up here we have a dead cow, yeah, that has been carbon dated to the 15th, 16th century. And we do have a nice written source that also mentions that they went across the pass with cows to take them to market.
So there's actually a skeleton of a cow in there?
Yeah.
Tucked away in the water?
Yeah, except
preserved
carefully. For the skull that's in our... with us. The office.
I see, so you've radiocarbon dated that,
yeah.
So that's how you know,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
From 15th, 16th
exactly.
century. I see, okay. And the box that you found, what was in it?
It was like a black lump of stuff, and it turned out to be cereal grains.
And so what can that tell you about...
What they took along to cook for themselves to eat up here, or if they cooked, or if they just made a porridge kind of thing.
So what would conditions have been like when, for example, that box that you previously found was deposited here all those years ago?
I think the climate would have been pretty similar. It's sort of the end of a relatively warm climatic phase that sort of stops by about 1500 BC. Sort of then it gets a bit colder.
Right, so the box would have been left here and then the ice would have come over.
Yeah, basically it was probably
preserving
left.
It.
Yeah, they probably left it. Maybe it was lying on the surface for a couple of years and then it was covered by ice and didn't melt 4,000 years.
And as an archaeologist, that must be incredibly exciting to find something that's thousands of years old and gives you a huge indication of the lifestyle and what they were eating, the diet at that time and so on.
Yeah, that is really exciting and cool. And you first find it and realise that it's actually something special. It's not, you know, what you normally find is bits of pottery when you work on a normal site somewhere. Yeah. Of course, it's exciting for me to find the stuff, but it's also still sad. Really, I'd rather have the snow still. Rather they was a bit more icier still.
Yeah. And I guess time is running out for you.
Yeah.
In terms of how quickly the glaciers are melting, how quickly ice patches like this are melting. I mean, how many archaeologists do you have on hand in this canton, in this region?
It's me.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
An ice patch is particularly important for an archaeologist like Regula. Because it's stationary, any artefacts stay put, whereas a glacier moves, albeit very slowly.
So this is one of the typical things of a glacier, that it moves downhill and it has like a line of equilibrium, and whatever goes in above that line of equilibrium comes down the same distance from that line of equilibrium. And what that means is that whatever goes in gets spat out further, sooner or later. While an ice patch is stable and stays stable for thousands of years, which is why we have these old finds here and not in a glacier. Finds that come out of glaciers are often medieval, because whatever went in there in Neolithic time probably already was spat out in the Bronze Age or the Roman period, basically. So these ice patches are especially important because they are stable, they don't move, and they preserve things that are 6,000 years old.
So it's literally frozen in time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And once it melts out, it's over.
The finds all have to be measured, logged, their position recorded, and then taken back down the mountain to the lab in Bern for analysis.
So, very excitingly, I've been given the task of bagging my find of cow bone. So, oh dear, it's covered in silt, but there we go, pop it in. With the tag and zip it up to make the journey back down the mountain to the lab. So that's 16th century cow bone right there.
With much of the local economy here centred around tourism, ice loss is having a huge impact on the industry.
During my trip, I bumped into Andy Duff, a mountain leader who's been visiting the Alps for 40 years. He's also seen the sharp end of our melting mountain landscapes.
The chat in the mountain community is, it's more dangerous in the Alps now. It's warmer, things are not stuck together as much, which means things are falling down the mountains.
So you've got rock falls happening more often?
Rock falls happening. There's been times this year where people have been on the top of Mont Blanc and it's been several degrees above freezing. Quite bizarre. Just earlier this summer, there was a hut, a bivouac hut, that fell off on the side of Mont Blanc. So things are moving around more, and that makes working more dangerous. Moving over the glaciers is more dangerous. In summer, you can walk over some glaciers with relatively little technical equipment. But as things are warming up...
So no crampons or anything?
Potentially, you can walk on some areas without being roped up. But those areas now are getting crevasses opening up on them, and it's a more dangerous. And it's requiring more equipment or going different routes. Routes are changing.
And when you actually get to the huts where you're going to stay for the night...
One of the strange things is you arrive at the hut and you kind of look up and you go, why is the hut so far above the glacier? Well, maybe not in my lifetime, but that hut was probably built on the edge of the glacier, and now it might be 30, 40 metres above it. And it's just another evidence that you see around yourself that things are changing. Definitely it's warming up and the environment is different.
And changing rapidly.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've only been working for, you know, half a lifetime, but I think I could see it in my time. Since I came here as a student climbing in the Alps, it feels different now. I think when you see that very visual evidence of ladders going down to the ice that weren't there before, it's something very, very visual, and you can see that that is an accelerating process.
And so you have to install more ladders in order for people to be able to walk down and actually get down onto the glacier.
Correct. There's a particular place on the back of Chamonix Valley where you go to the hut. And imagine the hut's here, and you actually walk down the ladders, and written on each ladder is the date that ladder had to be installed. And so the top ladders are like 50 years apart. You get down to the bottom ladders, and they're a decade apart. And I think it's just a very visual way that you can see it when you're actually going down these ladders to see how that ice is receding.
And that's the speed of climate change, then?
Absolutely.
The shrinking shape of our glaciers is even changing our maps.
So, yeah, this is it. Actually, this is only part of it. We've got a couple of rooms, but in here you'll see we've got 400 or so drawers of maps from every part of the world you could think of.
At University College London's Map Library, I met Professor James Cheshire. The tens of thousands of maps stored here include some which show very clearly what's happening to glaciers.
The biggest map we have here is of the biggest glacier in the Alps, which is the Aletsch Glacier. And it's across, I think, five separate sheets. And this is a nice kind of scientific document in a way, because they've actually marked on here the previous extent of the glacier. So here we've got kind of a pink, a purpley line and a reddish line, which shows how the glacier changed between 1850 and 1600. So around 1600, we were going through a slightly colder period, and after that, so there was the glaciers were further down the hill. They were much wider. That's something else you can see here. The width of the ice is much higher than it was in the 1950s, which is when this map was created. And then we have a slight retreat in 1850 and beyond, and then you can see how things have...
Sort of an accelerated retreat after that.
Well, from the last 100 or so years, you know, things have been shrinking a bit. And I'll show you in a second.
Shrinking a bit or a lot?
Well, shrinking a lot. The reason I said a bit was because the Aletsch is such a big glacier that it responds a bit more slowly to change than, say, the smaller ones. But it's still losing huge quantities of ice. And in fact, by 2100, I think they may expect sort of a tenth of the volume of ice to be remaining from where it was, you know, 50 or so years ago. And you can really get a sense of some of the changes that are happening in the Alps from maps like this. We can go and have a look at the touch table, where I've put this massive map down onto the screen and compared it to a satellite image that was taken just a few weeks ago.
Okay, let's go and have a look. I've got two maps of the Aletsch Glacier.
And we can actually compare how the ice has retreated from how it was mapped in the 50s to how it is today. It's not just moving up the valley, but it's getting thinner as well. And we can see from our left-hand map, we have a couple of kind of tongues of ice coming down, joining together, moving towards the base of or the snout of where the Aletsch is. Today, they've all but disappeared. And I think what's so important here to remember is that the glaciers are a system. They have inputs and outputs. If we think of the inputs, it's fresh snow. You need more snow to have survived the summer than has melted, basically.
Is that balance becoming distorted, so you're now getting less coming in and more going out?
Yes, so for a lot of these glaciers, the snow line is getting higher and higher and higher, to the point where in many cases, most glaciers, in fact, across the Alps and certainly in the Pyrenees, that snow line has now become higher than the top of the glacier itself. And so you're in a situation where there is no snow that's surviving the summer. And as a result of that, that melting that's occurring is not being replaced.
Seeing the scale of glacial retreat laid out like that in front of my eyes really spells out what's happening. James Cheshire believes maps are a key way to bring home the impacts of climate change.
They're a really timely, or timeless, in fact, reminder of kind of what was once there. Many of us aren't lucky enough to visit all these places, but the maps actually can take us there and they can evoke something about those changes. I think the other thing that's really interesting is that they do help us to find out about what some of the unintended consequences of this might be, or the things that might surprise us. So borders actually might have to change as a result of some of this melting ice.
Borders, so country...
Between
country
countries,
borders.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hopefully you're getting the hang of this now, looking at lots of maps, different ice levels. And so I've got three maps here. The first one is from the 1920s, and we're showing the border between Switzerland and Italy, about where the Matterhorn is. And at some stages, the ice gets so deep, what they've had to do is kind of take a guess about where the border is going to go. It's actually crossing the top of a glacier.
Right.
There. Now, what happened fairly recently was the extent of the melting of that ice meant that they had to slightly shift the border, because a lot of these borders are based on what you can call a watershed.
What happens? Do the Italians and the Swiss have to come together and have a chat about,
yes,
so where's the border
so
going to be now?
Exactly. So they have to do these land swaps. So actually what I've got here, they're of slightly different years, but these are the two most recent maps. You can see actually how when you follow the border around all the rocks, it's kind of really jaggedy and it follows every single rock and divot. And then when they get to the ice, it's kind of a smooth straight line, because they've got slightly less to go on. Exactly. And so it's in these regions where the ice is melting that they're obviously getting rocks and stuff poking through that they need to make these changes.
So James, at some point some of these glaciers will disappear. At what point do you start taking them off maps?
Well, that's a really good question. There's a slightly grey area at the end of a life of a glacier where it might just be a patch of dead ice and it just sits there for a while. It's no longer an active glacier. And then, of course, in a lot of cases, you're switching from ice to a lake or something, which is the sad thing. So ultimately, you know, if the glacier is no longer there, then it has to come off the map. That's ultimately what's going to have to happen. And, you know, it just got me thinking, as someone who's a cartographer, as someone who kind of freezes moments in time on a map, for these things to then disappear off it entirely, it's pretty shocking to see in real life. And I think it's something that only really conveys the extent of the change that's happening in these mountain regions. And it's really kind of at the end of the life of many of these glaciers, which have been declining for years. I mean, they're not going to come back. They're just gone forever now.
Their loss matters, and not just to archaeology. Whole water systems in this area depend on glaciers for drinking supplies, agriculture and energy generation. So is there anything which can be done? I've read about madcap-sounding schemes to cover glaciers to protect them from the sun. Could that work? I put it to glaciologist Matthias Huss.
These geoengineering projects, they work at a local scale, but they have never been intended, and they won't ever work at the glacier scale, so to save the glaciers. But for economic reasons, it can be quite reasonable to put some white blankets on top of the ice to prevent the ice disappearing below ski run, for example. So just to maintain economic activities, because then you can also invest a certain amount of money to save the ice at one place. These technologies, they won't ever be able to save one entire glacier and even less all glaciers in the Alps or worldwide.
If, and it's a big if, we manage to stop temperatures rising above the levels set out in the Paris Agreement, there is some hope that we won't have to contemplate a glacier-free world. But it's not going to be easy.
We can indeed save some of the glaciers in the Alps by reducing carbon emissions. We computed that about one-third of the ice volume that we have today in the Alps can be saved if the Paris Agreement is fully implemented. This is pretty ambitious. And even then, we will lose most of the glaciers. Let us assume we don't have any further temperature rise from today onwards. Even then, glaciers would strongly retreat, losing about half of their volume in the Alps. And that's because glaciers respond slowly to climate variations. So they can't keep pace with the speed of atmospheric warming. And therefore, they will continue retreating and only stabilize in a few decades, up to a century from now on. But still, we can keep some of the ice to show to our grandchildren.
I'm heading down the mountain now, and it reminds me of hikes I did in the summer when we went to visit family in the French Alps. And I remember the moment where my daughter, my youngest daughter, saw Mont Blanc for the first time, Europe's highest mountain, and she went, "Snowy mountain, Mummy, snowy mountain." And now I can't help wondering whether in her lifetime Mont Blanc will have ice and snow on the summit in the summer, and whether it will live up to its name, or whether it'd be better off being called Mont Brun, so brown mountain, rather than the iconic, majestic, snowy white mountain. And having seen with my own eyes the extent of the melted glacier up here and the now non-existent ice patch, it's really hit home to me the huge impact of climate change. And it makes me wonder what the Alps will look like in years to come and whether glaciers will even exist here in the future.